born to broadcast. Television news anchor, radio news anchor. This lady knows Lansing and is about to let you in on the latest. 1320 WILS presents Cheryl Fritz, your host for Fritz and Friends.
And welcome to this Monday edition of Fritz and Friends. Cheryl Fritz here, along with Scott Eckersley producing, coming to you on 1320 WILS and streaming live on 1320WILS.com. Joining me now on the phone from Washington, D.C., the Washington correspondent for the Min Post, Derek Waldbank. Hello, Derek. How are you today?
Hey, Cheryl. I'm doing just wonderful. How are you?
We're doing great. We kind of had a great day here. What was happening in Washington today?
Sunshine and 70, if you really want to know.
Okay, you're killing us now.
I've seen a cloud all day.
Is that right? We have them all
really,
here
really.
Today. I don't know what's going on in Michigan today. We need spring badly. A couple of things I wanted to talk to you about. One had Senator Debbie Stabenow on Friday on the show, talking about the impending shutdown. Once again, you and I have talked about this two or three times. Are we going to do that again this Friday, do you think? Because April 8th is shutdown day. If something doesn't happen this week.
You know, everything I keep hearing is that people don't want to shut down. The folks on the Republican side of the aisle, on the right side of the Republican caucus, seem to, you know, be saying this is where we make our stand, but the leadership hasn't really gone along with that. And so what we're hearing right now is that they're going to try and work together a deal. Democrats in the White House and the Senate say that they've agreed on a number. Republicans haven't fully committed to that yet, although they haven't said that the number's wrong. So, I mean, we think that there's going to be a deal worked out in the next few days, but that future discussions about, say, raising the debt ceiling or the 2012 budget are going to be a lot more contentious than this even was.
Well, you know, I find it interesting, and you're in the middle of it there, but when we hear that, you know, the Republicans are saying they're going to try to work together, that's what we sent them there for. That's what we sent them to do, is work together every day.
Well, you know, and here's the thing, Cheryl. I mean, a lot of people sit there and go, well, why can't everybody work together? Why can't they just get this done? Isn't this their job? Well, yeah, but you're starting out from two polar opposites. You have half the people who think the government really needs to do a lot more than it's doing right now, especially vis-a-vis people who are having trouble in their lives. And you have half the people who think that the only way that you can solve the economy is to get government the heck out. So if you've got two polar opposites like that in an evenly divided capital and an evenly divided country, I think conflict is somewhat inevitable.
Well, that's a very good point. That's a very valid point. But folks get frustrated, as you well know. Folks get frustrated mm-hmm. with the inaction. From what you're seeing, you know, are they working very hard to come to an agreement? I mean, we don't want a shutdown. They don't want a shutdown.
Well, I'll tell you the thing that's a little bit difficult to read right now is a lot of these discussions are going on behind closed doors. This isn't like a bill that works its way through the committee process. This is a bill that's getting negotiated really between about three people, and that being Barack Obama, Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, who's a Democrat, and John Boehner, the House Speaker, who's a Republican. Even the number two Republican in the House, Eric Cantor, doesn't know what's all on the agreement. He got told by a reporter what was in one of the agreements last week and got a little bit of egg on his face for doing so. But you know, this is really negotiated kind of by those three, kind of off the table, and so it's going to be a bit of a wait and see to see what actually comes in with this. Now, what's going to be interesting to see is if we can wrap this up early, because tomorrow Paul Ryan, the Republican chair of the House Budget Committee, is going to put out his version of the 2012 budget. And that's going to spark a whole lot of debate, because that's going to get into things like Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security and these things that right now in the shutdown threat right now aren't really being talked about.
Well, Debbie Stabenow also spoke about a bill she was introducing that, should we go into shutdown mode in Washington, that senators and representatives wouldn't get paid either. Because right now, if it goes into shutdown, the way the law works, they would. Have you heard about that at all?
I have. Realistically, the problem that Senator Stabenow is going to have is the same one that they faced in the House. which is the Democrats tried to pull that, and they got told very swiftly that such a measure was unconstitutional. It's a nice idea. It's nice in theory. It's nice to introduce a bill, but it's kind of unconstitutional on its face, and so it's not really going to go anywhere. But it does highlight the problem, Cheryl, of a lot of people stand to lose. Members of Congress might still get paid, but military families won't. You know, military families who have people left behind get assistance for the people who are behind. And the people who are essential employees, like, you know, those serving abroad in Afghanistan and in Iraq, they're going to get their money eventually, but it might not come on April the 15th if the government shuts down. It might get done retroactively. And if you are an enlistee who's over in Iraq, you're 19 years old, you need the money to come on time. I mean, people in the military, some of them live paycheck to paycheck, and if that paycheck isn't there, it gets made up a little bit later. You're still late on your car note. You're still late on, you know, a whole bunch of other things. So that's kind of a thing that's difficult, and I think that there are there's a lot of animosity going on around that because people just don't understand why that would be the way that it is. Unfortunately, it just happens to be that way.
Well, and there was an article I read at the end of last week about federal workers, you know, starting to get into anxiety mode as we're approaching another, you know, shutdown date. The ripple effects of this are huge.
They really are. They really are. And let me tell you something, because it happens in Michigan when people come up there. You know, when Michigan's government shut down a few years ago, on October the 1st, the only effect that it had, and it only shut down for about 3 hours, but what happened was that park rangers went throughout state park to state park on the day of bow hunting season, the day that opened, and said, you got to get out, you got to get out, you got to get out. And Michigan, as you know, is such a big hunting state, and it's caused problems. People don't, there are some people who just won't go to state lands anymore because they just don't know that that's going to not happen. You're talking about that in your national parks. You know, people out on camping trips that are going to have to get hustled out because the government's not going to be open. You're talking about people who are going to be sitting there wondering, what's going to happen with my mortgage? What's going to happen with this benefit? What's going to happen with that? You know, some coming out, some don't come out. And it would take more time than you have in your entire show this week to go through the details of what will still happen and what won't. It's very confusing. And it's very frightening for people who do depend on those services.
Well, and as you said, with the military families, which it's outrageous to think that we would be put into a position where the military families who are serving overseas wouldn't be paid, much less the other thousands and thousands of people that would be involved in not being paid. Then a ripple effect starts. If you're late on a payment for something because the government, you didn't get the government pay that you were expecting on time, then that causes other problems in your life, not just the money. Then other processes get started.
Mm-hmm. And it's true. And I should also remind your listeners that this budget shutdown stuff, people keep talking about, oh, this needs to get done, this needs to get done. You know when the original deadline for this budget was? September 31st last year. They've been kicking the can down the road with extension after extension after extension, with Democratic majorities, with Republican majorities. So it's kind of a little bit of everyone's got a little skin in this game, and everyone's a little bit at fault, and perhaps if we started acting a little bit more like adults and less like, you know, children who don't want to go take their shower and go to bed, then we'd be doing a little bit better.
Why don't you,
you got a job to do.
I was just going to say, Derek, you just need to take the floor and mention that.
Nobody wants me as their representative, Cheryl.
That's why you and I are in politics. We just talk about it.
Exactly.
It's interesting, and I love getting your perspective from there. You were involved in another incident that made big news last week, a conference call with Senator Charles Schumer. And why don't you tell us about that call? I loved when I found out you were one of the reporters on the line. Give us the background of what it was.
Well, we were all, a lot of reporters were waiting for a conference call with four Democrat senators talking about, what's holding up negotiations. And Democrats are saying that part of the problem that Speaker Boehner is having is the Tea Party wing of his caucus. And, of course, one of the people I cover is the head of the Tea Party caucus, Michelle Bachmann. So, of course, you know, this is an interesting call to me. So we get on, and about 5 minutes late, Chuck Schumer comes on the line. He's the number three Democrat in the Senate, and he starts talking about how extreme these are, and these folks are, and how, you know, we need to call them extreme because that's the buzzword that everyone, you know, has decided on that they're going to use, and this, that, and it was all internal strategy. And no one really realized that reporters were on the line. They thought everyone was on mute. So we just heard the internal strategy. And it was kind of funny because it's the sort of thing that goes on all the time. You just never really get that window pulled back quite so openly. And I've got to tell you, Cheryl, the four who came on afterwards, they went right on the line. Extreme, extreme, extreme. They stuck to the talking points really well.
The articles that
came out about that were about, the strategy.
Well, it wasn't about what the call that followed afterwards. Did the folks on the phone at some point realize, or they just heard later when everybody reported on it, that you were all on the phone? Did they know at the time at any point during that call?
I think they realized when someone went whoops and switched it off. But after Chuck Schumer stopped mid-sentence, a bunch of us were sitting there on the line, and someone said, "Oh, do you think that they knew we were on?"
Oh,
I don't know.
Oh my gosh. And this is the one we just happened to hear, and of course because reporters were listening, we got all the details of it. Is this common practice? Everybody, both sides, it just happened to be a Democrat that we heard that was doing this. Is this common practice? Everybody gets out the talking points so everybody knows what to say?
You know it is, and let me tell you a funny gaffe that happened last year that illustrated this. Frank Luntz, a Republican pollster, sent around a really long memo about words to use in the healthcare debate to try and get people on your side about that. And it was just a big old packet. It went to every Republican, and it wasn't supposed to get, put out to the rest of us, but it did. And on one page of this, kind of far down, was a picture of, small business owner who needed to, who needed the help and was going to get destroyed by the healthcare law. Small business owner standing next to then Representative Mark Schauer, Democrat. And so Mark Schauer's picture was in there as an example of, a poor person who might be hurt by the healthcare law. Of course, Mark Schauer is a big supporter of the healthcare law.
Yes, he is.
And so it was really funny when I called his office and I said, "Hey, do you know that Mark Schauer is starring in the Republican talking points memo on health reform?"
And their response was, "How quickly can we get that down?"
Yeah, we all had a big laugh about that.
You're just in the middle of everything. Another thing you're in the middle of, you mentioned earlier, Michelle Bachmann. She's on the air all the time now. Things are going well. Tell us about what's happening with her. And she's raising a lot of money. You just wrote an article in the Min Post about it, about $2.2 million in the first quarter.
Yeah, she raised $2.2 million in the first quarter of 2011. And let me give you some context for that. That's more than a lot of incumbents raise across an entire two-year cycle for a House of Representatives campaign. $2.2 million, a lot of people would be happy with that from January 11 to December 2012. That would be a fine number. If Tim Walberg raises $2.2 million, you expect him to just be over the moon about that. If Mike Rogers does, he'll be really happy. $2.2 million in one quarter is unheard of. She was the number one fundraiser in all of the House of Representatives campaigns last year. And to give you an idea further, that's more than Mitt Romney raised in the last quarter. And what it says is that if Michelle Bachmann jumps into this race for president, which she's thinking about it right now, I don't think she's decided yet. I really don't. A lot of people think she does, or she has, but I don't think she's fully in there yet. But if she does, she will not have to worry about fundraising. She will be okay, and she will have the money to compete. Will she have the message? We don't know. Will it be broad enough to appeal to everyone? Jury's still out. There's a lot of people who really don't like her in the Republican Party, but she's going to have the money to be able to go and compete as a serious candidate. And I think it was a message to a lot of people who have been dismissing her that they need to take her seriously or they're going to suffer. Because people who underestimate Michelle Bachmann, there's a long line of them at the unemployment office.
Oh, that's well put. And referring to your article where you mentioned Mitt Romney, he's raised $1.9 million in the first quarter, which, again, you'd be very pleased with. But she's got
it's
him.
Not bad.
Yeah, but she's certainly got him. Now, this is for her congressional race, as you said. If she does decide to jump over to a presidential race, when that decision is made, can she take this money with her? Can it move?
Well, the money is split about $1.7 million for the congressional race, about $500,000 for her PAC. Her PAC money is what's paying her staff operatives and anyone's staff operatives. They're paid by PAC money if it's not related to their official congressional job. The congressional money can transfer over down to the last little red cent as long as she doesn't run for the House again. She has to make that decision. And if she does, then she'll be able to take all of that money over. And we're talking millions and millions of dollars. She said she's going to decide by sometime in early summer, possibly May, possibly June, but that's all in the end of the second quarter. So my guess is that she'll probably have about $4 to $5 million in her congressional account to be able to walk right on into a presidential bid if she really wants to.
Well, you've been covering her for a long time. She certainly has captured the public's attention.
She certainly has, and you're right. We cover her quite extensively. I talk with her regularly every single week. Talked with her about 3 or 4 times last week, and so if anyone's ever curious about her, minpost.com, and you'll get anything on her and Tim Pawlenty as well. And you know, we have 2 people in Minnesota who are running for president, are thinking about it, mm-hmm. and so we're going to have pretty comprehensive coverage of the presidential race as it goes through.
Well, I count on you in Washington. Derek, I can't thank you enough for your time this evening.
I appreciate it. It's always a pleasure.
Okay. Have a great evening as well. Enjoy that weather. Hope it'll be here one day.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks so much, Derek. Good night. We've been speaking with Derek Wallbank, who is the Washington correspondent for the Min Post. We'll be back with more Fritz and Friends after this.